ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 190 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have a very special interview with legendary comics creator Mike Grell, who is known for his work on Green Arrow, Legion of Superheroes, Tarzan, and many other good things. We talk about the series and his part in it, as well as what he thinks of the show and what we might see in the future from him. This interview was recorded during the recent Florida SuperCon, so a big thank you to them. You'll also hear some other folks' voices as people talk with him as I recorded this interview at his table there. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show.
Okay, all right, we'll go ahead and get started.
It's interesting because you just had somebody bring you a drawing of Arrow that you did. What's it like to have the Arrow show be so popular right now on the CW? And of course, you're associated with the character, but like Longbow Hunters and the wonderful other artwork that you've done. And you've even done some of the Arrow the comics that they did based on the series.
Yes, I did. It's really quite a kick. I enjoy the show. They did a really good job at crafting something that was similar but different. You know, you can see that it's based on or reflects a lot of the work that I did, but they definitely went their own direction. The production values are extremely high. It's like watching a pretty decent low-budget movie as opposed to television, and the actors and the stars are doing just a terrific job. I think Stephen Amell is going to be the next big star, really. I see him as like best thing I can compare him to is like when George Clooney was young, the camera just really likes this kid. And he's not only great looking physically, he's a good actor, and he's a very, very nice guy. He's going to be a megastar.
In the 70s, it was Green Arrow.
And in the
80s...
Right,
I did the Longbow Hunters, which kicked off the series of Green Arrow, right? But I never called them Green Arrow. And then it kicked off the television series that they call Arrow.
Now there's a comic on that.
Right, and I did the Wanted poster for the Arrow TV series.
So are you doing the Arrow comic then?
I was, yeah. Not anymore, but there's actual pages from the Arrow comics right here.
One of the things I noticed about Arrow is that they've taken the look that you developed for Longbow Hunters and incorporated that into the show. Were you aware they were going to do that, or was it kind of a nice surprise when you saw that on the screen?
The first I knew about it was when they called me up and asked me to do the Wanted poster for the show. And they hadn't finalized what the final look of the character was going to be yet, or the costume, but they knew that he was going to be wearing the hood. And it gave me a kind of a rough description of what they wanted. I actually did three different versions of that poster, and they chose the one that looked the least amount like him. At first I couldn't figure it out, but then it finally dawned on me that it's supposed to be his description of himself to the police sketch artist. So he's not going to say, oh, and by the way, the guy had a little mole right over here, you know?
That's great. That's really neat that they contacted you to do that. That was really a great thing.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah. It just feels to me like when they did the Batman movies, they went back and looked at classic Batman stories. And it feels to me like they looked back at your stuff to help make this show as good as it is, because there's a lot of the elements that you had in there. And it's just amazing to me. It's just great that even now the Longbow Hunters is having an influence on the Arrow character.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's one of the things I'm most proud of for my work in the industry.
That's great. And what do you think about the... They actually poked fun at the name Green Arrow once.
Yes, they did.
What did you think about that one?
I cracked up. I cracked up. Because that was my take on it, you know?
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I always thought the name Green Arrow was a silly name. And, of course, where it came from was that at the time that it was created, 1941, Erwin Hansen and George Papp created that character. And it was hard on the heels of Robin Hood, and there was also a movie version of the Black Arrow. And, of course, they just took that and modified it and came up with the Green Arrow. So that was, you know, you can understand back in the 1940s, but, you know, if you were a modern-day superhero, would you really call yourself Green Arrow? Probably not.
No.
I did a story that was essentially an origin story where Oliver Queen is attending a costume ball dressed as Robin Hood, and he foils a robbery that is in the works, and of course he's wearing the mask and the costume and everything else, and the guy who tries to rob the place tells the cops, "You never would have caught me if it hadn't been for that big comma green comma arrow guy." And that's where they got the Green Arrow.
Wow, very cool, very cool. Now, of course, one of the great things about the show is they have all these wonderful little, what they call Easter eggs in it. And your name was actually mentioned in the show. You probably are aware of that.
Yes, Judge Grill.
Yes, remember that.
The corrupt judge.
Yeah.
My niece phoned me up and said, "Uncle Mike, you're famous." And I said, "Sweetie, I've been famous for 40 years. You just never noticed it before." And she said, "So did they have to pay you to use the name?" And I said, "You know, if you're wondering, am I going to die and make you rich? No."
Very cool. Well, that's great. That's one of the nice things about it, too, is all these inferences to DC Comics and other things in there. I was just really, like you, I laughed when I heard your name going across there. The great thing about that is people who understand that your influence on the character, that was a great little homage to it. And I just thought that was super cool on that.
Yeah, I was pretty proud of that. I was pretty proud of that.
Really, really good.
Now, you did that one in the 80s?
Yep.
That's awesome.
87, I think, it came out.
It was so cool that Green Arrow's so popular now. It's always been my favorite, even before the show. Green Arrow and Aquaman. This is so awesome. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. So I imagine since the Arrow TV show came out, this surge of popularity has been beneficial for you as well?
Yeah, it certainly has.
Good.
They're reprinting all of my old Green Arrow stories in compiled volumes. And nice to see that royalty check roll in. You know, I started with the Green Arrow character back in 73.
Oh, wow.
74, yeah. I was doing backup stories back then, and there were 7-pagers. And then I just happened to have the good luck to be in the office the day that word came down that Denny O'Neill was resurrecting the Green Arrow title. And I went straight to his office and said, "Okay, who do I have to kill?" And he said, "If you want it that bad, it's yours."
Awesome. That is so... You know, how late did you draw for
it? I did the Longbow Hunt. I stayed with Green Lantern, Green Arrow for several years until I switched over and started doing my own independent titles like Sable and Star Slayer.
Okay.
But then I went back when Mike Gold phoned me up and said, "What do you think about doing Green Arrow?" And I couldn't resist it, really.
Come on.
Yeah. It's always been my favorite comic book character, period.
Yes.
Yeah. So then that was 87, I think.
I see.
Yeah. And I stayed with the character until 93 when I dropped the book in order to go over to Image and do Shaman's Tears.
Okay, well, amazing. Thank you. So were you the writer responsible for connecting him with Black Canary?
No.
No.
No, that was already done probably in the 60s.
Okay, very good. I had only started reading from the 80s up, so.
Yeah, well, I'm the one who actually had him in bed doing the sex thing together.
Oh, okay. You worked on any of the wedding issues?
No, good God, no.
Okay.
Not being hypercritical of either the writer or the artist, on the wedding issues, but in my personal opinion, marrying two characters off is the surest, fastest way to kill the book.
Wow.
Look what happened with Remington Steele, Magnum P.I., Moonlighting, right? Where do you go from there?
Right.
Green Arrow and Black Canary had a great relationship, probably one of the best relationships in comics. They obviously had a sexual relationship. They lived together. They had no particular reason to be married. In fact, that was part of the crux of the Longbow Hunter's story.
Right.
Ollie's feeling like his biological clock is ticking, and Dinah doesn't want to have kids.
Right, right. Did you work on the episodes with the boy when he was an arrow addict?
No, that would be that gentleman right there where it says Neil Adams.
Really?
Yep.
Well,
straight at the end, big red letters.
Well, thank you for your time. Thank you for taking care of
me. You're welcome. Welcome. Thanks for coming by.
As far as, it's one of the things too on the Arrow show that I, that creation that you did that they integrated, was the Shadow character out of Longbow
yes.
Hunters. And I just thought they did a pretty interesting job with the character. What was your feeling about how they handled the Shadow character?
I was just disappointed when they killed her off. I thought it was an interesting approach. My first hint that they were going to use her was actually when I saw the trailer and I saw him take his shirt off and he had her dragon tattoo on his back. So when I was doing the Arrow comic book, I talked to Mark Guggenheim and he said, yes, they were definitely bringing her into the series and there was going to be a key plot line, storyline that would explain how he has the dragon tattoo, what the symbolism is. So hard to argue with that.
Yeah, she was great. And of course, she was very integrated into the Slade character, the Deathstroke character, which was a new take
right.
on her, which was something I hadn't seen before. So that was kind of interesting, too. And of course, they've always given Arrow interesting villains to fight on the show. Are there villains that you would like to see them do to put up against Oliver Queen? Because they've done, like, Deathstroke, and they've done Ra's al Ghul. Are there other Arrow foes that you'd like to see them do?
Well, let's see. They had Eddie Fires in there, and I think they killed him off. I'd really sort of like to see them incorporate Hal Jordan in a story. Not Green Lantern, but Hal Jordan. I think the two characters would make an interesting play off each other. But as far as villains goes, who would make a good villain for that show? Well, somebody brought the Warlord Green Arrow crossover book and said, do you think they'll ever do that? And I thought, you know, that would be interesting to see that. It would be really funny. You find a guy who looks enough like Stephen Amell to have the guys play in the same scene together. Or you could even, you know, do the split screen double kind of a thing where they actually are played by the same actor. That would be just totally fun.
That would be
but, you know, they never ask me. They just don't.
That's too bad. I think you could give them some great suggestions. But now, going back to Hal Jordan for a second, have you been watching The Flash?
I'm sorry to say I have not.
Okay, because on The Flash, they've made several references to Coast City and the company, the Ferris Aircraft, and things like that. So,
well, then maybe they're going to.
Maybe great minds think alike, and they're actually thinking about putting Hal Jordan in there, which would be great to see. It would be wonderful. Because you also draw Hal Jordan very well, I think. The Oliver Queen was great. The Longbow Hunter outfit was wonderful. Of course, Neil's wonderful costume, too. But I think yours was much more realistic in the sense of if you're trying to keep your identity secret, you don't necessarily want everybody to be able to see your face. So the hood was a brilliant move, I thought. Really great.
Actually, my take on the Green Arrow character was that the little domino mask thing is stupid. Bet you can't guess who I am. Like, you put on a... Here. Nobody will recognize me, right? That works to a certain extent for comic books, but if you're talking about the more realistic stories, you have to have a little better disguise than that. That's one of the things I really loved about the Green Lantern movie with Ryan Reynolds, where he calls Carol Ferris Miss, and she goes, "Hal? I've seen you naked, you know? You think I can't recognize you because I can't see your cheekbones?" Like, oops.
That was great. Now, I'm kind of interested, too, because, you know, there's been a progression in the Arrow character over the years. He starts out as a killer. You know, he's not using any kind of trick arrows or anything like that. He's just using regular arrows, which is a lot of what you did in the Longbow Hunters, the use of the regular arrows,
right,
boxing glove arrows and things like that.
Right.
And again, I think that was something that they picked up out of reading your books. And he's evolved a little bit. What do you think about the evolution of him moving from a killer away into something that's not quite so brutal, shall we say?
I think that was probably either a studio mandate or some sort of network decision more than about anything else. The sort of going in the reverse direction from what I did. But then I had a reason for him becoming a killer. I wanted to do stories that were more entrenched in the real world. And I think perhaps the producers are thinking that they want to stray a bit more from the real world and get more into the fanciful stuff. I was specifically trying to take him away from the Denny O'Neill years, where Denny had created a storyline where he accidentally kills a guy who's trying to kill him, and that accidental death strikes him so hard that he not only swears he's never going to take another human life, but he goes off and joins a monastery. And for the kind of hard-edged stories that I wanted to draw and write, I needed to take him away from that. And the best way to do it was to give him a damn good reason to become a killer. I mean, an actual killer. Not accidental, but pretty much cold-blooded, hot-blooded, whatever you want to call it. Homicide is homicide. Perfectly legal, by the way, to kill someone who is in the act of committing a felony, especially if they are endangering somebody else's life. So it was justifiable homicide, but nonetheless, it was a homicide, and it made a change in that character that affected him from that point on. And it wasn't one of these things where you pass it off and go on to the next thing. He was affected by it for the rest of the whole run of the series while I was on it. It changed his life. I did a metaphor of stepping off a cliff. You know, if you decide to jump off a cliff, you can't unjump halfway down. You know, you change your mind, it's too late. You make that decision in the moment, and the consequences are yours to bear for the rest of your life, however long or short that might be.
So you were saying that they've reprinted some of your Green Arrow. Which ones are readily available if somebody wants to catch up on the Green Arrow, on your Green Arrow stories?
The best way to catch up on mine is to pick up the reprint series that they're doing right now. Start with the Longbow Hunters in trade paperback, because the individual copies are pretty pricey and can be difficult to track down. And then DC is slowly but surely reprinting all of my stories in collected trade paperbacks, usually 6 issues per volume, and they are up to the 3rd volume right now.
Great. Very good.
My favorite one that I've drawn other than my own is, man, it's a toss-up between Green Arrow and Tarzan. I did the Tarzan comic strip in the Sunday papers, and I just did a special Dark Horse Presents story called Tarzan and the Gods of Opar. Yeah, that was a lot of fun going back there after all those years. I pretty much have to stick with that, but apart from that, of the characters that I created myself, my favorite is Sable. You know, as you get older and older, it gets harder and harder to find somebody who will give you an assignment. So the alternative to that is to go ahead and do your own thing.
What about you in the drawing comics?
Well, I wanted to be a lumberjack just like my old man until I was 16, and he got me a job working in the woods peeling popple. And as soon as I found out how hard that old boy had been working all those years, I decided there's got to be an easier way to make a living. Then I would have been an architect, except that involves something called math. And that was in the days before computers and CAD programs. You had to be able to do that stuff in your head or on paper. Couldn't do that. So then I decided commercial art, because it had the word commercial in it, which means you're getting paid while you're still alive. And art, which means that you're not really working, right? But I got caught up in the draft and wound up enlisting in the Air Force. And in basic training, I met a guy who was an aspiring cartoonist. And he told me, forget that, you should become a cartoonist, because cartoonists only work 2 or 3 days a week and they make $1 million a year. And I said, sign me up, baby. 43 years later, somebody owes me $42.5 million. Not to mention about 39 years vacation time.
Can we talk real briefly about John Sable?
Yes.
What's the status of John Sable currently? What's the status of John Sable freelance currently?
Right at the moment, we are bringing out a new omnibus set of John Sable freelance from Comic Mix.
Okay.
And it's going to be available in softcover and hardcover. They're soliciting, in fact, I think they're soliciting volume 2 right now.
Wow. Are there plans to do any more new John Sable?
Yes, there will be. I have a second novel in the works. I'm actually about a little over halfway finished with it. It's called simply Freelance. Mm-hmm. The first one is entitled Sable. And I have another graphic novel planned. Well, I've actually got it all plotted out and half written, called Rules of the Hunt.
Okay.
I've also written a screenplay.
Ah.
That's getting some play. But Grandma said, spit in one hand, wish in the other. See which one fills up the fastest. And, of course, Grandma cleaned it up for us kids. So you can never be too certain when Hollywood is involved whether or not it's real.
Oh, yeah.
I'll know it's real when the end credits roll and the check clears the bank.
That'll be good. I really enjoyed that book. It was very much of a realistic series in the sense that so often in comics and in these kinds of shows, it doesn't have a ring of real to it, but yours did. And I always liked the way that was. I always thought that was a great way to tell those kinds of stories. I like that.
I was trying to break away from superhero comics as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, if you've read Sable, you know that the whole thing that made Sable work was that he's the exact opposite of Batman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was the inspiration for it.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't work for the greater good of mankind.
Mm-hmm.
He's a mercenary. He works for money.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't have a secret identity.
Right.
The battle mask that he wears is just camouflage paint. And, like I was saying earlier about a domino mask, it's not fooling anybody, and he's not trying to, except that he does have a deep, dark secret. No secret identity, but his deep, dark secret is that he's a closet nice guy who writes children's books about a troop of leprechauns living in a fairy mound in Central Park.
That was the strangest thing to me, that he wrote children's books. But you were anchoring him in the real world, which I thought was cool.
Right.
Very cool stuff. Now, as far as you said that you're doing Tarzan for Dark Horse?
Yes. I just finished a three-part story called Tarzan and the Gods of Opar.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote it and drew it. It's appearing in Dark Horse Presents right now.
Are there other projects you're working on that we should be aware of?
We are going to be resurrecting the Pilgrim.
Okay.
I've spoken to Mark Ryan, and he's very enthusiastic about it. He has a backer who wants to fund the project, and I'm quite excited about that. I'm going to be going back and doing more Maggie the Cat probably next year. I have some high hopes for that project, and I'll be picking up where it left off. We'll be reissuing issues number 1 and 2, and then continuing on from there. I may decide to do it all as a single graphic novel, or I may reboot with issue number 1 and then launch it as a monthly series first.
Can you explain what that is just a little bit for people who may not have read it?
Maggie the Cat is a spinoff of a character who first appeared in Sable. She's a cat burglar. Lady Margaret Grimalkin, she used to be a model who married a ne'er-do-well British lord. She's got a title. She thought she was going to be living a Princess Grace kind of a fairy tale life. And really what she wound up with was more like Princess Di. Her husband was a philandering SOB who had the bad manners to kill himself in a car wreck with his latest mistress, leaving her pretty much penniless. Lots of family debt and all that other stuff. But the only thing she's got left of the estate is a ramshackle castle in Scotland with a stone gatehouse that she runs as a bed and breakfast. But she's a survivor, and little by little, she's been going around stealing back all the expensive family jewelry that her husband has given away to all his mistresses. And the British SAS get wise to her, the Secret Service get wise to her, and they press her into service as an undercover agent, and she is the perfect clandestine agent for them because, for starters, she's an outsider, which has always been her problem since she's an American in a British society. She's not one of the gentry in the first place, but she's an American. She's deniable. If she gets in trouble, they can abandon her and just leave her her own fate or her own devices and walk away from the whole thing. They have a problem on their hands, which is that there's a terrorist organizer, a plotter. He's the guy behind things like the attack on the Munich Olympics. He's an ex-Nazi in that, you know, he's a creaky old fart, but he was a member of the Hitler Youth during the war, and he was a personal pet of Adolf Hitler himself. And when the war was over, he went deep behind the Iron Curtain, worked for the East German Stasi until the Iron Curtain fell down. And most recently, he's been working with terrorist organizations all over the world. Well, this guy is on his way out, and he sees no particular reason why the rest of the world should outlive him. And the SAS knows this, but they can't find the guy. But this guy's prized possession is a small Vermeer painting that was given to him as a personal gift from Adolf Hitler during the war. And they know where the painting is. So they want Maggie to steal the painting and bring it to them, and then they're going to offer it up to auction and just follow the buyer straight back to the bad guy. Unfortunately, things don't work out quite that way they planned, and Maggie winds up getting hung out to dry. And that takes us all the way up to partway into Act 2. And for the rest of Act 2 and Act 3, you got to buy the book when it comes back out.
That makes good sense. Any other things that you're working on besides these things, or is that kind of keeping you busy?
I have a novel called Savage Empire, which is based on the comic strip that I based The Warlord on. And I should be finished with Savage Empire early in the year. And I have another one called Earthbound that I'll be finishing up in September or October, and hopefully have it out in time for Christmas.
Wow. So you're keeping busy. That's really great. All the good stuff. Well, Mike, it's good talking with you. When your guy comes back here, I'll buy one of your prints, and then I'll let you guys know when it's going to air.
Terrific. Thanks, Wayne. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
San Diego Comic-Con, you have not failed this city. My name is Oliver Queen.
But you knew that. After 5 years away, I came home with only one goal. I wanted to save my city. Along the way, I gained a brother. I saw people that I had known my entire life become superheroes. And I fell in love. But I lost people. Forever. The person that I was and the persona that I created, he failed. But Star City, not Starling City, Star City still needs saving. And all of you, you can bet your last dollar that me and my team will bust our asses trying to save it or breathe our last breath trying. All of you have come with us this far, and I would ask you to come just a little bit further with the Green Arrow.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man of flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this week. Be back next week as we count down to episode number 200. But until then, keep reading your comics.